Anthony has described the wonderful work in chordates, but even plants try to avoid self-breeding using a receptor ligand system that, again, is reminiscent of NK cell recognition. Surgeons have been familiar with the idea of allo recognition for centuries. So, for example, 16th century professor of anatomy in Bologna, Gasparo Tagliacozzi, who was famous for his Italian method of nose job, knew the distinction between isografts and allografts. So what he was doing, without knowing it, was to apply the first two laws of transplantation, which were only discovered really in the 20th century, so 400 years after he was using one person's skin from the arm of the same person to avoid allo rejection. Now, calling them laws is a little bit too strong. As George Snell writes in this book published in 76, it's a bit too strong because there are exceptions. One exception that I will come back in at the end, and that Kalle has already alluded to, is hybrid resistance, whereby children reject transplants from parents, violating the third law, which says that actually grafts from parents are always accepted by F1 hybrids. But what about the fetus? And let's come back to the original question posed by Peter Medawar. This is a drawing taken from a book published in 71 by Rupert Billingham and Will Silvers, which states very clearly that the fetus will have alloantigen, so of course they can be targeted for rejection, but they are not. The first papers that addressed the question as to whether the immunological, dissimilarity between mother and fetus would have any impact on the mother immune system and whether this would have consequences on fetal placental growth were published in the 60s. The first one that I could find is from Billington and the second one from James. Now, these two authors worked in the same laboratory and they produced within 1 year a single author paper in Nature, where they clearly showed that when the fetus and the mother are antigenically dissimilar, there is an advantage for fetal growth and placental growth. Anne McLaren in 65 also published a brilliant paper in which she analyzed all the variables that one should bear in mind when genetic and environmental factors that may bear on fetal placental growth are being analyzed. Now, and this is the last piece of historical reference, a paper which I find brilliant and a sort of a forerunner, published in the Journal of Experimental Medicine by Beer, Scott, and Billingham, used not only inbred mice, but also rats and guinea pigs to, again, establish that the dissimilarity between mother and fetus would be beneficial for the growth of the placenta. And they mapped this down to a lymphocyte reaction happening in the lymph nodes draining the uterus, so the paraortic lymph nodes, which were much bigger. That's all they could measure at the time. They were much bigger in hybrids than, so in crosses between genetically dissimilar male and female, than in syngenic pregnancies, where you still see some immunological reaction. But what I find even more astonishing is that this sentence here, where they say that this response, which is reminiscent of a delayed hypersensitivity reaction, so a cellular response, it's not antibodies but cellular, this reaction is believed to stimulate local angiogenesis, which facilitates transportation to the site of nutrients, and so forth. So essentially, what they're saying is that what matters is what's happening in the decidua, and there must be cells that recognize, that do allo recognition, and favor growth of the placenta. Now, another elegant paper that I'd like to remind is the Tafuri paper in Science 95, where using transgenic mice, they also showed that the maternal immune system is aware of fetal antigen, which we now have established this morning. So if we look at the physiology and the anatomy of maternal-fetal interaction, three things, I believe, are important to consider, and we have already gone through this morning. One, the maternal immune system is aware of fetal antigens. Here we can find both T cells that may recognize male antigens, for example, as Lise has told us. We will have also antibodies, anti-RHD and anti-HLA antibodies. We will find both fetal cells and trophoblast cells in maternal circulation. And the third point is that really, as Billingham was saying in 75, we should look locally in the decidua. And what are the cells? Now let's zoom in and let's look at the local response, not the systemic response. What are the cells that are there that can mediate allorecognition? Really are two types of cells, the uterine NK cells and the T cells together with the antigen-presenting cells, which can be looked as a unit. And the questions I'll attempt to address in the next 20 minutes or 15 minutes or so are four of the nine questions that we've asked ourselves to think about. And I will also try to illustrate what the strength and the weakness of the mouse model might be to study immunogenetics of reproduction. So what is the role of maternal T and NK cells in pregnancy? And do maternal T cells and or NK cells affect the survival of the fetus? There will be talks about T cells, so I will not talk much about T cells. I can tell you what I gather from reading the literature, and that is there is evidence that T cells may cause the demise of fetuses, particularly in animal models. NK cells are not really known for doing that. But what we think NK cells are important for is for their trophic function on the arteries, something that Anne Croy showed for the first time. So although T cells may be very detrimental at some point, so they are important, and it's undeniable that there are mechanisms that keep them at bay, we also cannot forget that there are abundant NK cells in the decidua, as it is shown here in this sagittal section of an implantation site at mid-gestation in mice, and every green dot is an NK cell, and in red here you have the trophoblast, the invading trophoblast. In mice, the invasion is not as deep, and in human, this is one big difference, and the mouse may not be the best model to study trophoblast invasion. But also in humans, you can see that the NK cells and the trophoblast interact. So there is the potential for cellular interactions that would justify allorecognition. And as Bill was saying very early this morning, things are complicated and may become even more complicated when it comes to looking at subsets of NK cells. And we can perhaps simplify matters a little bit by using at least two markers that Anne has done, and Croy has done, and we are doing also in the lab. And these two markers are, one, a marker of peripheral NK cells, which is called NKp46, and a marker that has been traditionally used to mark NK cells. It's a lectin that binds uterine NK cells, but not the peripheral NK cells. And you can see them both in the decidua. This is the invading trophoblast. This is the decidua, which is decorated by both pink and brown. And so what are they doing there? But first of all, let's look quickly at the phenotype, comparing human mice and also the periphery and the uterus. And this is a slide that Selma Boulenoir in the lab has done. And it's based on evidence from several laboratories, including Strominger, Mandelbaum, and Bulmer. So they can be distinguished by expression of markers. For example, this one in here in humans, this is dim in the periphery and bright in the uterus, but that's not very important. The point I want to make is that there are differences between the peripheral NK cells and the decidual ones. And the most important difference, perhaps, is that the decidual NK cells, both in human and mice, don't kill very well, but they produce cytokines, including angiogenic factors. And another important difference in the two species is that they may produce different factors. For example, in mice, interferon gamma is key, but perhaps not so in humans. What is becoming clear is that NK cells are important for vascular remodeling, and reminiscent of the Botrytis system, where allorecognition seems to be important for vascular remodeling during fusion or rejection. Here you can see a section of human mouse decidua. This is a uterine vessel, and you can see in brown the NK cells in the two species. And again, here there may be differences. The remodeling of the vessels in the mouse might be done mostly by NK cells, while in human, both trophoblasts and NK cells may remodel the vasculature. In other words, the trophoblast here will take over the endothelial cells in humans, but that doesn't seem to happen in mice. Something that I find exciting is that the role of NK cells in vascular remodeling may not be confined to the uterus. And there is now evidence coming up, and including this paper by the Nick Morell lab, where both John Trousdale and myself have helped defining the phenotype of NK cells in patients and mice that suffer from a condition that is an idiopathic pulmonary hypertension when there is insufficient vascular remodeling, just like it happens in preeclampsia and in fetal growth restriction. So what we're learning may be important also for atherosclerosis and other cardiovascular diseases. Now let's go back to the pioneering work that Ancroy did actually in my lab, but it wasn't my lab. At that point I was a postdoc in Jim DeSanto's lab, looking at mice that were NK deficient. In fact, these mice lacked all lymphocytes. And they were compared with mice that lacked all lymphocytes, but they had been reconstituted with normal bone marrow cells. And here you see the differences in vascular remodeling that is normal here, but insufficient there. So you need lymphocytes, and you need NK cells, and Ann also showed that you need interferon gamma coming from the NK cells to remodel the vasculature. And what Ann also showed, and now we've done also in our lab, is that NK cells are not only necessary, but they may be sufficient to do so. So if one looks at smooth muscle actin as a marker of vascular remodeling, then it's gone when the vessels have been remodeled, and that happens in mice that lack T and B lymphocytes but have NK cells. This is not happening in mice that lack all lymphocytes, including the NK cells. So we think that the NK cells are necessary and sufficient for the vascular remodeling, which is necessary for placental growth. Something interesting, and that is what Ashley told us to do, and we did. We always do what Ashley tells us to do. It's a good idea. We looked in areas in the mouse decidua that in normal mice, where NK cells were not present. And it was interesting to see that the blood vessels there were not being modified. So again, another indication that you need a close interaction of NK cells and vessels in order for the NK cells to remodel the vessels. So, okay, there is allorecognition and there are responses. Are they directed towards the fetal cells or the trophoblast? And here I would like to spend just one sentence on a T-cell allorecognition, a thought-provoking sentence, and the question has been already asked this morning. It seems clear to me from my reading of the literature that the maternal T-cells are aware of fetal antigens, but I still haven't found a clear evidence that the no evidence that I can see of trophoblast antigen-specific trophoblast-specific antigens that are recognized by T cells. So we still are unclear as to what the effector mechanisms of the potentially detrimental T cells may be. And I'm looking forward to the next talks. One reason to, again, question the effector mechanisms of T cells is the expression of major histocompatibility complex molecules on the trophoblast. Here you might have noticed that I've drawn a lot of pink uterine NK cells flirting with the green trophoblast cells, but only one blue T cells flirting with the trophoblast. And that's because of two reasons. One, there aren't a lot of T cells in the de situ, but there are many, as Tamara has shown. But they lack the HLA-A and HLA-B molecules that are the best presenters to T cells. Of course, the trophoblast expresses HLA-C, which may present to T cells, and I'm sure Tamara will tell us about that. On the other hand, uterine NK cells seem really geared up to recognize the MHC molecules expressed by the trophoblast. And in fact, the work that we are now all familiar with, the work in Ashley's lab, has now established over the last 10 years or so that certain combinations of HLA-C genes and KIR genes are associated with complications of pregnancy. Again, giving sort of genetic epidemiological evidence that NK cell may be important. But how does it work? And again, can we use the mouse to understand the biology behind the genetics and the epidemiology? And that's what we're trying to do in the laboratory. And we took a very simple approach, but that's what you can do with mice, as Liz was saying this morning. Simple but illuminating on the biology. So we took mice that are genetically identical. These are the common laboratory BALB/c mice. We first analyzed, and this was mostly the work of Richard Apps, analyzed the expression of MHC molecules on trophoblasts, because we found the literature a little unclear, so we wanted to do it at home. And actually, we didn't find very clear answers, but at least we had evidence that there is a selective expression of MHC molecules that is not mirroring the situation in humans, but again suggests that there may be something going on there. So, for example, in the BLAC6 mouse, we found that only H2K was expressed, not H2D. And the non-classical MHC molecules were not expressed in several strains we looked at. So there is something selective there. So then we ask the question, what happens if we compare two groups? One in which we mate syngeneic males and females on the BALB/c background, and one in which, again, they are genetically identical, but they are differing only at the MHC locus. So these white mice here express the MHC of black mice, and excuse me the politically incorrectness. And what we found was that the spiral artery remodeling was sort of amplified in this cross. So again, we repeated the experiments of the 60s and the 70s, but we confined the genetic diversity only at the MHC, and this accounted for about 50% of the phenotype. In other words, if you outcross a BALB/c mouse onto a BLAC6 male, you will have even a bigger phenotype. But 50% of phenotype is explained just by the MHC-linked gene, so less than 1% of the genome. And this work is now published a couple of years ago. But so again, one could say, but okay, but that might also be allo recognition, and it may work through NK cells or T cells. Can you demonstrate this through NK cells? And this is the work that Jens Kickbusch has done in the lab, and he will present the data tomorrow. And I'll finish just by summarizing what we have found. But first I need to show you, to walk you through the mating strategy that we used. And we used BLAC6 mice this time. So this is our baseline, syngeneic mating. And now we introduced an extra MHC molecule through the father using a transgene expressed in BLAC6 mice, a transgene which is H2D of D. This is an allo H2. And the strain is also called D8. Now, the NKologist among you will recognize this strain, which was used in the late 80s and 90s, mostly in Stockholm at Karolinska, to understand the biology of bone marrow transplantation, and I will get to that in a second. The beauty of this system is that the mice, males and females, are genetically identical, but the male expresses one extra MHC molecule. So you know that the fetus is going to be genetically dissimilar from the mother just by one gene, and that is the one allo MHC class 1 molecule. And what we found, and Jens will show you the data tomorrow, is that both the arterial remodeling and the fetal growth were impeded in this cross, suggesting that the paternal MHC might inhibit NK cells. Something important I forgot to say is that this MHC is very good at inhibiting NK cells, a bit like HLA-C2 in humans, so it's a bad combination. We also had control crosses where we now could decide whether the transgene would come down through the maternal line or actually from both. So in other words, this would be something sort of a new self or allo self, and this would be completely tolerant. And the surprise here was that it didn't really matter where the MHC came from. As long as it was expressed in the placenta, it would inhibit the NK cells, at least we think so, and the outcome of that would be a defective arterial remodeling and defective fetal growth. And this work, we hope, should be published soon. But Jens will go through the details tomorrow. And I will finish by going back to the exception to that third law of transplantation. And I like to remind people about this because hybrid resistance, this exception, was a sort of a laboratory oddity for years. It was discovered in 64. So Kalle told you that he hopes it won't be decades until they work out the biology of transplantation, but they have already been working on 50 years and they haven't, they're making good progress though. But since 64, this exception to the third law was discovered, and no, from my reading of the literature, it was really an oddity. Until then, it was realized that it was mediated by radio-resistant NK cells, which would detect missing self. This is a slide that I've been given as a gift from Rolf Kissling, who happened to have discovered NK cells at the Karolinska in 75. And here is, again, a simple experiment in which it's clear that the F1 hybrids will reject the parents because they sense the missing self. So the point I want to make is that the mouse models can be very important to illustrate biological examples that then may also help to reveal our own biology or human biology or pathology. And so that laboratory oddity became really the framework to understand the haploidentical bone marrow transplantation that Kalle has illustrated, which really, I don't think is an exaggeration to say, makes now the difference between life and death in patients. So this slide is from the original work published by Loredana Ruggeri and Andrea Veardi in 2002, which was coupled with a beautiful commentary paper by Klaas Schere called The Perfect Mismatch. But now we know, as Kalle said, that there are also other situations that we need to explain and understand better. It's not just a missing self. But again, you know, if we try to make parallels between transplantation, bone marrow transplantation, so half mismatched bone marrow transplantation, and pregnancy, it becomes clear that these parallels will hold. So in other words, if we look at half mismatched offspring and mother here, during a bone marrow transplantation to get rid of leukemia, the cells from the mother, which are actually probably the best donors to fight leukemia relapse, will have one of these three situations. They will be inhibited if they encounter an MHC molecule that they can recognize through an inhibitory receptor, or they will respond due to missing self, or through an activation receptor, they will kill the leukemia cell. And now if we just change the words here, and instead of donor cells, we call them maternal uterine K cells, and instead of leukemia cells, we call them trophoblasts, again, as a mental exercise, there are very interesting parallels where we can learn from. So in summary, the mouse can inform research in human biology. I think we all agree with that. There are important differences in human and mouse reproduction, and mice and humans do use different genes to regulate NK cell functions, but I think that is sort of the idea is, I can sense the idea is gelling today in this workshop. It's not just in my head, I hope. If we try to understand how allo recognition contributes to the immunogenetics of pregnancy, then we should be able to make progress towards understanding the immunological paradox of pregnancy. And I'd like to stop by thanking the people in my lab that have done several parts of the work that I've presented, collaborators like Miriam Emberger and Peter Hoglund, and a special thanks to Ashley Moffat and Anne Croy, from whom I still learn a lot. Thank you very much for your attention.